You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Her Money is proudly sponsored by Edelman Financial Engines. Every day we plan and save for our futures, but are you taking into account tax strategies when dealing with your investments? I know, it's not something we think about often enough, but you can find ways to save and invest more and better plan for your future. Visit planefe.com/hermoney to schedule your complimentary wealth checkup today.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. I'm Jean Chatsky. Thank you so much for joining me today on Her Money. Menopause. Yeah, let's talk about it. Today, I am joined by neuroscientist Dr. Lisa Moscone, and we're going to get into going through menopause and how it affects everything from the way we work to the relationships we have with the people we love the most. We'll also talk about changes we can make to our diet and the ways we can take care of our bodies to help minimize the symptoms that come with menopause. As somebody who once got 20 hot flashes a day on a regular basis, I am down with this. But before we do that, let's get into the news of the week. First up, any way you slice it, the U.S. economy has improved over the past year. Inflation is hovering around 3.2% compared with 6% last year, and that should be making us all feel better, right? Well, not so fast. The vibes, as they say, are off. Most Americans say they think inflation is worse than it was a year ago, according to a recent poll by the Wall Street Journal. So what is causing this disconnect? The simple answer turns out to be that most people don't really understand the definition of inflation. Just because inflation is slowing doesn't mean prices still aren't going up. They're just going up more slowly than they were last year. Most people think that if inflation is improving, prices should be going down. That's deflation, and it rarely, if ever, happens. Another explanation could be that people tend to consume media that aligns more with how they are feeling, and that Americans simply have a generally pessimistic view of the way things are going overall. In other words, the echo chamber at work. Next up, recent data from Realtor.com shows that in all of America's 50 biggest metro areas, it is now cheaper to rent than buy. This is due to a number of factors, including rising home prices and elevated mortgage rates, although they are starting to come down. While it was already cheaper to rent than buy in 90% of these areas, the real estate market has pushed that number to 100%. The place where the gap is highest? Austin, Texas, where the average monthly rent hovers around $1,500 a month, while a monthly mortgage payment will set you back about $3,600. If you're deciding between renting and buying this year and you can afford to buy, look, I'm going to state the obvious. By buying a house, you're investing in an asset that appreciates over time, historically. On the flip side, if you're living in one of these areas with a huge gap, it might be best to wait it out. Finally, Levi's stock, ticker LEVI, yes, I'm talking about the jeans company, went up last week after they bumped their full-year profit forecast higher than they originally planned. But social media is also buzzing with speculation that Beyoncé's new album, Cowboy Carter, has something to do with it. The album features a song called Levi's Jeans. They spell Levi with two I's. And the lyrics are things like, boy, I'll let you be my Levi's jeans. And, oh, you wish you were my Levi's jeans. I can't say it as well as Beyoncé. No one can say it as well as Beyoncé. While Levi's is not admitting to a paid partnership with Beyoncé on the song just yet, they did recently change their Instagram logo to match the style of the album. We're going to take a quick break. Her Money is proudly sponsored by Edelman Financial Engines. Have you taken into account tax strategies when dealing with your investments? I do it with my advisors a couple of times a year, and so I can tell you. The right tax planning can help you save, but the wrong ones, well, they can cost you. Are you saving where you could be and taking advantage of strategies that can help you grow your money for the future? With a little advanced planning, you can find ways to save and invest more and make sure this year is one for the books. Visit planefe.com/hermoney to schedule your complimentary wealth checkup. And we're back with my interview with Lisa Moscone. Lisa, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
I think many of our listeners may feel like they know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it just to level set. What is menopause really?
Oh, it's a really good question. And actually, there's an official answer and then there's my answer. Can I give you both?
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
The official answer is that menopause is the end of a woman's reproductive life. And it's really defined based on the function of the ovaries. There is an understanding that at some point, the ovaries will start producing follicles and the menstrual cycle will stop, also leading to a woman's reproductive senescence or a lack of ability to bear children moving forward. Now, that is the traditional understanding of what menopause is. The actual scientific and more complex understanding and definition, which is also more correct, is that menopause is a neuroendocrine transition state, which means that this transition or this change impacts your brain just as much as it impacts your ovaries, with the difference, important difference, that the ovaries may close down shop, but your brain cannot afford to do that. And therefore, menopause is effectively a renovation project on the brain, where a woman's brain learns to depend less on hormones like estrogen and progesterone. It needs to find other pathways and other routes to provide energy for itself and protect itself and rewires itself to really support women's brain health for another 30 years or longer.
When you talk about things like hot flashes and memory lapses and anxiety and depression, those are all neurological symptoms that come from the way that menopause changes the brain, correct?
That's exactly right. And I find it very interesting that most women are aware that menopause may bring about some changes like hot flashes. Right. But even then, for many women have come to me saying there's something wrong with my skin. And I'm like, nope, it's actually your brain. There's a very specific part of the brain that's called the hypothalamus, which is in charge of regulating body temperature, that is impacted by the fluctuations in hormone levels. And that is supposed to be triggering the hot flashes, at least in part, is one of the reasons that women get hot flashes. So it's the brain that's glitching and regulating body temperature from the neck down. And at the same time, the symptoms you mentioned, the insomnia, the anxiety, the brain fog, the memory lapses, those are all symptoms of menopause. They have nothing to do with the ovaries and everything to do with the brain. It's the brain that is changing, and these changes produce or trigger the symptoms that so many women actually suffer from, because you know, as debilitating or as unpleasant as hot flashes can be, the number one concern for menopausal women is brain fog.
I believe it. I have been there and I have done that. And I was laughing in my head when you said the brain is glitching when you have a hot flash, because my brain was literally glitching 20 times a day. And not just from the neck down, by the way. Like, I got sweaty from the neck up too. But we're going to come back to that. When you started your research, there wasn't a single study that looked at women's brains before and after menopause. So when you looked at women's brains before and after menopause, what did you find?
The first study that we did was back in 2017, which is actually offensive. As a woman, I was profoundly offended. I was not doing research on menopause. I was doing research on Alzheimer's prevention. And we ended up studying menopause because we and others have found that it may be a trigger for Alzheimer's disease for some women. And therefore, as a scientist, I said, well, what's been done already? What do we know about the impact of menopause on the brain as women go through it? And what I've learned is that very, very little research has been done to really look at women's brains as a function of menopause. And all the research at that point looked at menopause more like an outcome, what happens after. So the brain imaging was done on women who were perhaps a decade past their last menstrual period. Our question was more, how does menopause impact the brain as women go through it, as a process, as an actual transition? And so we started doing brain scans. At first, we were comparing women who were either premenopausal or perimenopausal in the middle of the transition or postmenopausal. But now it's been 7 years and counting, and we have data on the same women as this woman's brain is going through having or not having a menstrual cycle, which is quite fascinating from a neuroscience and neurological perspective. And what we have learned is that the brain changes as women progress through menopause, and there are changes in gray matter volume, which gets a little bit thinner in some parts of the brain. There are changes in brain energy levels, and mostly there's a little bit of a decline, a reduction in brain energy, which so many women can tell, right? It doesn't take a brain scan, yes. But evidently it does take a brain scan because so many scientists and providers do not believe, and so many people just do not believe that menopause actually impacts the brain directly. And we also found changes in connectivity and changes in biochemistry. So in other words, menopause is a neurologically active process that is related to the aging process, but is also independent of chronological aging in many ways, that reshapes and rewires women's brains in ways that we're really just starting to get real data about. I believe we're still one of the very few centers looking at women as women are going through menopause. So I'm hoping that more and more scientists will start also looking into it because it's so important.
The reshaping and rewiring, what does it do to us? How does it manifest itself? I'm thinking of all of the incredibly vital, productive women that I know over 50, over 60, over 70. Are all of these changes negative or some of them positive? What is happening up here? I'm hitting my own head.
So what we know is that menopause changes women's brains in ways that are not that different from puberty and pregnancy, right? So we think of these important times in a woman's life as being disjointed from each other. But in reality, it's the same network, it's the neuroendocrine network that is activated during puberty, is overactivated during pregnancy every time a woman is pregnant, and then is partially deactivated after menopause. So these symptoms that women experience during menopause are actually not alien. If you think about it, we've all had a preview, right? If puberty is a little difficult, the mood swings during puberty are off the charts sometimes. So this sleepiness, yes, the brain fog, or the change in body temperature, you sweat as a teenager, right? And the same things can happen during pregnancy. 30% of pregnant women have hot flashes. We just don't call them hot flashes, right? This is just something that happens to you because you have a baby in your belly and your body needs to elevate body temperature to host the pregnancy. And there's the baby blues and there's postpartum depression and the sleepless nights or too much sleepiness. Something similar happens during menopause because it's the same brain that is at this point saying, I don't need all these neurons that we're regulating the menstrual cycle and we're enabling a pregnancy, should you choose to get pregnant. So all these neurons can go. So in a way, it's a chance. Menopause is a biological clue for the brain to get leaner and meaner, right? This is something that we're exploring right now, and I think it makes so much sense neurologically because it's really expensive to have a big brain with all these different neurons. So if you don't need them, you're better off just getting rid of them, which, however, leads to the rewiring and the changes in energy levels and the changes in gray matter volume and the symptoms of menopause that may come from this rewiring and remodeling. Now, is it all bad? No. There are contrasting theories. I'm optimistic personally, and I do see an evolutionary explanation for menopause, which is called the grandmother hypothesis. And at the bare minimum, what this hypothesis says that at some point in the course of evolution, something happened to women's brains and bodies that enabled women to outlive menopause and enter another non-reproductive stage of life, which is very unique. It's very unique in biology because actually the vast majority of female animals die soon after the end of their reproductive span. Basically, their lifespan tends to coincide with the reproductive span. Not so for women, which is actually, I believe, a huge gift in so many ways. And only four other animals outlive menopause, and these are killer whales, which I think is wonderful.
Great.
I love that. Another type of whale is the narwhal. And then one type of elephant, the Asian elephant, perhaps a type of giraffe, and then a little insect. It's called the Japanese aphid, which somehow turns into a spike ball, like a hedgehog almost after menopause. Like, do not come near me. And I think it's really sweet. But so I would say that number one, the ability to outlive menopause is a gift. Effectively, aging, in my opinion, is a gift. Now, we don't want to be negatively impacted, right? So for the symptoms, there are solutions, there are things that one can do to feel better. There's no need to suffer through menopause. But also, neurologically, we know that menopause is associated with greater life contentment for many women. And if I may elaborate more on this, because I know that most people are like, what did she say? But actually, there are surveys in psychological studies that looked at life contentment as a function of age and menopause. And what the studies have shown that there's a slump in happiness as women
go
through menopause. Yes, the smile. Yeah, I was thinking a U-shape, but the smile is so much better. But then life contentment actually rebounds on average 4 or 5 years after the final menstrual period and then keeps increasing, which was interpreted as postmenopausal women being generally more content than premenopausal women, but also being generally more content than they themselves were before going through menopause. And this, of course, it depends. There's variability. It's not an absolute. But I think it's encouraging that on average, women can experience renewed energy and better mental health and more happiness in some ways after going through menopause. And also greater empathy and emotional mastery, which means that things that used to upset you in the past do not hold the same charge after menopause. I just think that it's encouraging to think of menopause as in a different way than this doom and gloom narrative that's been really permeating the conversation for so many years, where we see menopause as something to fight or fix or we're trying to get away from. Why not embracing it and just looking at some of the positives at least, while also making sure that nobody suffers as a result of it? There's no need to suffer. And still today, menopause is one of these very few, if not the only scenario in medicine where silent suffering is not only accepted, but actually encouraged.
100% on that. And it particularly has to change at work. As you know, we are a money show. And so we're going to talk about the financial cost of menopause. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick break. When it comes to retirement, women want different things. We want safety, security, stability, and the ability to live life on our own terms. One way we can achieve all of that is with an annuity. If you're not familiar with annuities, the concept is that essentially you take a chunk of money and turn it into a paycheck that you can start drawing on when you want to, next year or next decade. The ParityFlex multi-year guaranteed annuity available from Gainbridge offers security and flexibility at a time when women need it most, retirement. A guaranteed lifetime withdrawal benefit means you'll have a consistent income even when your account balance is zero. Plus, you'll get guaranteed returns at 5.95% APY. Who's with us? Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Please visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for important information. This is a paid endorsement. If you're listening to this show, you're probably already investing in your 401k, yay, balancing your budget carefully, and planning exactly how you want your retirement to look. But there's one important thing on your checklist that you might be missing: life insurance. I got life insurance for the first time when I had a child. Why? Because I knew that life insurance is income insurance. And as soon as you have somebody else depending on your income or your time, which would cost money to replace, you need life insurance. You want to cross this off your list fast. SelectQuote can offer up to $2 million in instant affordable coverage with no medical exam required. Plus, quotes are completely free and take only minutes. I know you're busy, but do me a favor. Take a couple of minutes today to get your free quote. Go to SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com. You are going to feel so good checking this big item off your to-do list. And you'll find details on that sample rate at SelectQuote.com. We're back with Dr. Lisa Mosconi, author of The Menopause Brain. So let's talk about the cost of menopause. A Mayo Clinic study found that it costs American women an estimated $1.8 billion in lost working time each year. When you think about the cost of menopause, how do you frame it? And how do you, for women who are looking to control their own individual economies, how do you suggest they deal with it?
It's a really good question. And I'm not an economist by by any means, but I think what's happening in menopause is that women are looking for relief. And relief comes in ways that are not as straightforward as one would wish. It's very unusual for a woman to go to a provider or a menopause specialist and come out of the office with a prescription for hormone therapy. You're much more likely to be bounced around and having to see many different specialists just trying to, number one, understand what's happening to you, because a lot of providers do not necessarily associate things like brain fog or insomnia or anxiety or depression with menopause. The answer usually is just grin and bear it.
How do you get past that? I mean, I can tell you, I've been on hormone therapy now for, I don't know, 6-7 years, mm-hmm. maybe. I went on it when I was in perimenopause, went on the patch with the estrogen patch, which is just a patch you change twice a week, and every 3 month regimen of progesterone. And my secret sauce was that my doctor is 2 years older than me. And so everything that I was going through, she had gone through 2 years before. And it was just, I could not have imagined having a better doctor to shepherd me through this. But for women who feel like I need help, how do you get that help from a doctor? How do you find the right doctor? Mm-hmm.
Yes. And also, I want to clarify, I'm not pushing HRT on anyone. I'm just saying that for many women in the United States of America, women who go to their providers for the symptoms of menopause only 4% are prescribed hormones at this stage. And it's unlikely that only 4% of women would actually benefit from hormone therapy. But also it's important to have a well-rounded conversation about all possible options. Some women don't want to take hormones. Some women don't do well on hormones. Some women cannot take hormones. So it's really important to have a frank and complete thorough conversation around every possible option. And then you decide for yourself with your provider, hopefully, based on your own risk and benefit profile and also your own risk tolerance, which is another very important factor to consider. Now, how do you find a doctor to have this conversation with? I was surprised to hear that it's not as easy because, like you said before, only 1 in 5 residents, OB-GYN residents, actually trains in menopause care. So that's a little bit of a barrier to start with. So one helpful tip is to go to the website of the North American Menopause Society and look for the list of accredited providers. So they provide a list of all the practitioners, of all the OB-GYNs who are trained in menopause care. And then call the office and confirm, right, that the doctor is trained in menopause and it's up to speed and all the insurance is good to go. If you can't find a provider on that list who lives in your area, or perhaps you like your OB-GYN or you like your own doctors, then just ask them, are you well-versed in menopause care? And some people will say yes, and some people will say no, but it's good to know up front if you need to change providers at this point in your life. Something that I love personally is to see integrative care when it comes to menopause, because the best OB-GYN, the best one, will still not be trained to assess or manage your brain health, right? That's not what OB-GYNs do. So I would love to see other specialists also being involved, because I think it's past time that we really started looking at the woman as an organism and not a bunch of bits and pieces and different organs that magically come together and become a person. Changes in hormonal concentration do impact your ovaries, but they also impact your brain, your heart, your lungs, your digestion, your metabolic support, your metabolic processes. And I think integrative health will be very, very important moving forward.
Another complicated, difficult landscape to navigate is the landscape at work. What do you suggest to women who are experiencing all of these changes and symptoms and rewiring? What's the best way to get through it and maintain your career?
Well, I would say appropriate medical care is really the first step, because as soon as you find the right solution or patterns or combinations of solutions to support your symptoms and ease you through them, then you'll feel better at work as well as any other time of your life. And then I think the change needs to come from employers rather than employees, right? It's the companies, the CEOs who need to implement changes where perhaps a more flexible schedule could help, the ability to work from home on some days. Yes, having coolers around the office or having fans or just cooling the temperature in some rooms if need be, but also mostly inclusiveness and culture, just changing the culture around menopause, where it is understood that, you know, the same way that you express sympathy to a woman who is pregnant and there's an understanding that she may have a hard day, or if she's crying, she may need a hug, right? Or maybe a little time to herself. I think the same courtesy should be extended to women who are going through menopause. And also, I would also say, forget about being embarrassed. I hear it so many times that women just feel ashamed. They feel insecure. They feel like, oh, I'm sweating, so I can't give a talk. How about we just say it out loud? I'm having hot flashes and I'm here anyway. And if it bothers you, maybe you just grow up. This is my approach. And I want a party. When I go through menopause, I'm going to have a party.
Oh, I think that's a phenomenal idea. But I went on hormone therapy because I had a hot flash on television, right? And I felt like I never want to do that again, right? I never want to do that again. I want to be able to be in some control. It didn't completely get rid of them, but it got rid of most of them. You write about something that you call a second adulthood in menopause, which some women have referred to as a meno start, where women embark on new beginnings, new careers, new interests. What does this look like?
According to women who talk about this, it sounds like the menopausal zest, which actually anthropologist Margaret Mead came up with. So yes, I give her full credit for inspiring me to look at menopause as another chance to really appreciate your own life and perhaps engage even more in self-care than most women are able to do prior to menopause. Because menopause is a little bit of a strange time in a woman's life where your children are now growing, your parents are getting older, you're a bit sandwiched in between family responsibilities, probably your career at work and everything else that's happening and going on in your life, and then just menopause on top of it. And what many women report is a feeling of relief in a way once midlife and menopause actually are through. And for many women, it's a time of transformation where you're able to reflect more about you and what you want in life and everything you've accomplished. And there's often a feeling of renewed gratitude towards your own body and yourself for being able to withhold, really, to handle so much in your life. And it's a wonderful way to really think about the rest of your life, because most women spend between 30 and 40% of their entire lifespan in a postmenopausal stage. So I think it's really important to optimize for your self-care and your health and your mental well-being. So that part of your life may not be reproductive, but can certainly be very productive in a very, very good way to be alive and being on this planet. I personally adore women. I have the greatest respect for women's minds and women's bodies. And I think there's so much to look forward to. And I so appreciate older women because they really are beacons of grace, just grace and fortitude and generosity. And I just appreciate women so much.
I think that's a fabulous place to leave it. Lisa Mosconi, the book is The Menopause Brain. Thank you so much. I think that you've made a lot of people feel better with this conversation, certainly me.
Oh, good. I'm so glad. And please do come over for a brain scan if anyone is interested. We have clinical trials, we have research programs, we have an Alzheimer's prevention clinic. We are here to help.
Good to know. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Before we dive into our mailbag, a quick word from our sponsors.
Hey there, listeners. It's Nima Gobier. I'm the co-host of Mindshift, the podcast where we explore the future of learning and how we raise our kids.
I don't teach math. I don't teach reading. I teach people.
You'll hear from teachers, parents, researchers, and students as we uncover innovative approaches in and out of the classroom.
It holds a lot about how we want students and young people to move through the world, how we want to set them up for success.
Find Mindshift wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back for mailbag, and you all are going to be so excited because Catherine Tuggle is in the house. Hey, Catherine.
Hello. It is so good to be back on the mic with you.
It's great to have you back on the mic. And I thought that was just, I mean, I didn't want to make it a personal doctor's appointment for me, but you know, that is the temptation, right? To just.
Oh, always.
I loved what she had to say. And I think that her take on all the connections between your hormones and your brain, like they just make you feel better because it's not you. It's all of these hormones coursing through you over which you have very little control.
Exactly. Exactly. And I found her on TikTok because I thought what everything she was saying about women's health kind of blew my mind. And I think that's my algorithm because I'm health obsessed and yoga obsessed. But I kept getting her videos in my feed. And I thought everything she was saying, I found so reassuring about being a woman and about aging and about prevention. I'm all about prevention. and I knew we had to get her on. And I read her book in like literally probably a day. I couldn't put it down.
And I thought that the connection from puberty to pregnancy to menopause was really interesting. I did have hot flashes during pregnancy. I actually had hot flashes at 16, and that was weird. But during pregnancy, it wasn't quite so weird because I felt like a little furnace all the time. But what did you think about all those connections?
Yeah, I feel like I love what she said about puberty being kind of a preview, right? Like, I think we all, as women, have a relationship with our hormones that spans decades. I think about, I was just insane at 13. And then I feel like I went through another phase in my 20s. And now in my 40s, I'm feeling something different. And I know in my 50s, it's going to be different again. And I think having like a through line to know that this is hormonal, this is normal, every woman goes through it. It just feels really good to acknowledge that this is ground that you've tread before with a few new things thrown in.
And I hope these conversations are helpful too, right? I mean, I think she's right. I think the brave thing to do when you're at work and you're having a hot flash is to say, sorry, I'm having a hot flash. And I don't know that I was that brave. I think I was that brave in the office with you and Kelly, but I don't think I was that brave in like a boardroom meeting. But I think that's what it's going to take.
Yeah, exactly. And I loved that. And I think, yes, it is easier if you're surrounded by supportive women on your team. But I think in the same way that we have acknowledged childbirth being a part of life and the death of a parent being a part of life, this is also a part of life that needs to be embraced wherever we are.
Yeah, for sure. Well, besides being our time to talk about menopause, it is tax time. And we've got a couple of tax questions. So I want to make sure that we leave enough time to dig into them. Would you like to tee them up?
Absolutely. Our first question today comes to us from Carla. She writes, hello, I have a question. I owe the IRS $3,550 this year. I also owe $5,500 on a credit card, the rate of which is increasing to 23.99% next month. I'm wondering what my priority should be. Should I pay the IRS or my credit card? Hope to hear what you suggest. Thanks.
Okay, Carla. So here is what I want you to do. First of all, you seem to understand that there is a charge that the IRS is going to assess if you don't pay them in full and on time. And you're right about that. It is 0.5% of what you owe each month. That's the penalty that you have to pay. Now, how does that compare on the 23, 24, 25% that you are paying on your credit card? It's much lower. But with the credit card, you can flex a little bit. And so what I would try to do is transfer the balance that you owe on that credit card to a 0% credit card, a credit card that will hold that interest rate at 0% for a good 12 to 18 months. Then I'd focus on paying off the IRS. Somehow, in my mind, owing the IRS money is just more stressful than owing money to a credit card, because the IRS has the ability, if you don't pay, to do things like garnish your wages. Now, of course, it is not going to get into a situation that dire because you're going to take care of it. But I would handle the IRS first. Make sure, even if you can't pay the IRS in full on time, make sure you file your taxes. Because if you don't file, the penalty jumps from 0.5% per month to 5% per month. And it caps out at 25%. So that is huge and equivalent to what you're paying on the credit card. Go ahead, wipe out the IRS debt. Make sure that if this is a product of the fact that you underwithheld from your taxes, that you change your withholding so that you won't have this problem again next year. And then once the IRS debt is taken care of, focus on that credit card debt, get rid of that as well. And hopefully by the time the calendar year turns into 2025, you will be starting from a very clean slate. I know that's a lot of steps, but does that make sense, Catherine?
It does. I'm wondering about a payment plan with the IRS, because I had to do that once in my early 20s when I did not have my withholdings properly adjusted. And I felt like it was pretty easy. I just paid a few hundred a month or less than 100 a month.
Yeah, you can absolutely do that. And she may need to do it. It's unclear from the letter whether she's got a chunk of cash sitting there to pay one of these debts or the other. But if you don't, a payment plan is absolutely the right thing to do. The IRS is still going to charge the penalty, but at least you'll have a cadence of what you have to pay by when. And then, you know, I think this is the time when a program like the Finance Fix classes that we run could be really helpful, because the key to navigating this, the key to getting yourself in the right situation, is to take a good look at where your money is going so that you can start making adjustments about where you want it to go in the future.
Yeah. In Finance Fix, we deal with so many competing priorities questions. And to me, this is quintessential. It's competing priority, but it's also urgent priority. And I feel like that's exactly what we hear from our participants, that they finally have the money in their budget that they can make these decisions confidently.
Because they're paying attention, many of them, for the first time in a very long time.
Exactly.
I think we have one more.
We do. Our next question comes to us from Cindy. She writes, "My college-aged daughter worked last summer when she was home from school and made over $5,000. She opened a Roth IRA in 2023 based on that income. She worked for a very small boutique women's store that has two locations here in Seattle. But after multiple requests, she hasn't received a W-2, and no taxes were withheld. The owner keeps telling her she'll ask her accountant, but to no avail. My main concern is the Roth IRA being opened based on the 2023 income. Help. How does my daughter file without a W-2? And what do we do to prevent any issues in the near or distant future? Thank you."
First of all, Cindy, I mean, congratulations on raising such a hardworking kid. I think it's fantastic that she did so well this summer and that she wants to plow some of that money into a Roth IRA. That's admirable. And she is putting herself well ahead of the curve. I would basically use the IRS's suggestions as your Bible here. So what the IRS notes is that if you haven't received a W-2 by the end of February, and we're way past that now, they want you to reach out to the employer, which you have done, and then call them. And they are reachable. They're probably pretty busy this week, but you can try at 800-829-1040. Nice of the IRS to have a phone number that ends in 1040. They're going to need some information from you, including your daughter's name, address, phone number, social security number, the dates that she worked, and the employer's name, address, and phone number. The IRS will actually reach out and contact the employer and request the missing W-2. That should go a very, very long way. But in order for your daughter to file, she can use her paycheck stubs to estimate those wages and then complete a form called 4852 and attach that to her tax return. That'll enable her to get her taxes done on time. And the backup from that should be enough to back her up for opening the Roth, at least until she gets the official W-2, which she will eventually. Hopefully, she can be close enough in her estimations using her pay stubs that there won't be any sort of discrepancy in the taxes that she files as well as in the Roth that she opens. But I get it. I sense the frustration in your letter, and I hope that just reaching out to the IRS and asking them to make the contact on your behalf does the trick.
That's so frustrating. There's probably like a penalty for that employer, no? I feel like you have to do that promptly.
You know, what's so frustrating is this young woman is going to have a very bad taste in her mouth about taxes going forward. And I've seen all these TikToks this year with all these young people just so upset, crying when they're doing their taxes because it's a foreign land. Nobody's taught them how to do this. It's not that scary. It's not that hard. There's so much great tax software to help. And I hope that she can get past this and isn't afraid to put money in a Roth, because being able to do that at such a young age is such an advantage.
So true. Thank you, Jean, for the great advice.
Thank you for being here, Catherine. I think you're going to be with us on and off sporadically, at least as long as we can have you. We've decided we're gonna shake it up a little bit. Julia will definitely be in sometimes. You'll be in sometimes. I think we're even going to pull Kelly back in occasionally and have her in for mailbag. So some different voices that we're adding to the podcast.
Very exciting. And our team has just grown. I've always been here. I just have been doing so many things, as we all do. And I'm really excited to be back with you whenever you need me.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining me today on Her Money. Thanks to Lisa Moscone for sharing her research on the way menopause affects our brains. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to our show at Apple Podcasts. Leave us a review. We love hearing what you think. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Edelman Financial Engines. Her Money is produced by Haley Pascalides. This show is mixed and mastered by CDM Sound Studios. Our music is provided by Video Helper, and our show comes to you through Megaphone. Check out our new podcast, How She Does It, with Karen Feinerman, for intimate cocktail party style conversations with today's most talented female leaders. This podcast is also part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. You can find us and other shows like us at airwavemedia.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk soon.